atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We just have some breaking news to go over before we even go any further. Brett Baer is standing by. Senator Ricketts is going to be coming on a little bit later, and Mark Thiessen, second half hour. But we just understand that this has just come out, that that the judge in the Fulton County case has decided that D.A. Willis can stay on. Fonnie Willis can stay on the case if Wade leaves. Nathan Wade, the former boyfriend, we imagine, can stay, has to leave, but she can stay on the case, which means any further delays probably won't happen because no one has to get boned up on the case and the details. So it stays in Fulton County right now. So the judge up for re-election, you wonder if that played a role. A couple of days ago, we found out that he tossed out six charges, leaving three of which were against President Trump. So now the former President Trump, now it's down to 10. But now Willis gets to stay on the case. In a way, you could say to yourself, this is not bad, considering how incompetent and corrupt she comes off. I guess it's okay to lie. We all know she was lying. Everybody knows she was lying. Her best friend says she was lying. Text messages show she's lying. Pings on her location know she's lying about when the relationship started with Nathan Wade, how he got the job, who led the prosecution. I didn't have any contact with the White House, but you're visiting with the vice president. And you have Nathan Wade meeting in Athens, Georgia, with White House counsel. So Brett's there right now. So, Brett, we have this breaking news. Your reaction?
Yeah, it's a little surprising, I think, looking at all the evidence. But from the Trump legal perspective, it's probably not that bad. You know, making this case with her in charge is maybe – you know, easier to talk to a jury about that. But I do think after all that we've seen, for the judge to make this decision is kind of interesting.
Wow, that's so interesting that you say interesting. I mean, the average person watched hours of this, and nobody thought she was telling the truth that I know of, except for maybe a couple of MSNBC anchors. And now it turns out you can go in the stands, you can put your hand on the Bible, and you can lie and still get to try the former president of the United States. But a very complicated case, too. So they don't have to start from scratch. Nathan Wade is now out. But how people perceive this case is undeniable and I think indelible in most of our minds. Not many people I know take her seriously. And by the way, she's also up for re-election. So what do you think the feeling in the Trump camp is? Okay, if she's in charge, we're going to be okay?
Well, I'm just saying that this is she hasn't proven herself as a skilled lawyer. Let's just say that. And obviously, everybody saw what she said in the trial that you rightly point out was proven all along in a number of different ways to be exactly opposite. So, is that a vulnerability for the prosecution? Yes. Did the Trump legal team really want to push all of this back or make it fall apart? Ideally, yes. You know, they're getting a lot of delays in these court cases, and really they want to get past Election Day. Now, because it's Georgia, a state issue, you would still have to deal with it, but it would be a different deal as an incoming president.
Brett Baer with us now. So, Brett, I understand in a 23-page ruling – Fulton County Judge Scott McCaffrey wrote that defendants failed to meet their burden in proving Willis's relationship with Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade was a conflict of interest enough to merit her removal. So enough. That's interesting. Didn't say it didn't happen. Enough to merit her removal from the case. The judge also found an appearance of impropriety and said that that either Willis and her office must fully leave the case or Wade must withdraw from the proceedings. The judge's order is a significant legal victory for Willis, who maintains control of the historic criminal case against the former president. But the tawdry diversion has come as a personal and professional cost, as the embarrassing details of her personal life and romantic relationship have come under scrutiny. No joke. We found out everything, including why her dad wants her to keep cash everywhere. And the pings on those and the location and her friends and the former business partner and details about a divorce. Ultimately, She also picked, I understand, Brett, one of the most complicated prosecutions ever. You got 18 people on trial, two or three of which have already cut deals. So this is a very complicated case for somebody who doesn't seem to handle complicated well.
That's true. And, you know, the statute says even the appearance of impropriety. I mean, it seemed going in that that met that bar. You know, the whole paying with cash, and they did half of all these trips, just didn't add up. Nobody had an ATM receipt. It was all because cash had built up at her home. It just, you know, connecting the dots was tough for people to do. And there was a lot of doubt about what she was saying, that it was truthful. But now she stays on this case, and, you know, from a Trump legal perspective, I think they wanted to delay it, ideally. But, you know, whether she can effectively try it in the wake of all of this, I think is the question.
I mean, in a situation like that, you're going to go grab some other lawyers to do the hard work, right? You know, you almost appoint people to do the research, the strategy, and present the case. I guess you've already presented the case, correct?
Yes. I assume that she'd bring some other people on, especially if Nathan Wade has to go.
All right, a couple of things. If I could just stay on the trial for a second. Eileen Cannon yesterday dismissed former President Trump's motion to dismiss the case on unconstitutional vagueness. That's her claim. But the judge is taking a look at the second motion, and that's dismiss the case on the basis of the Presidential Records Act. Is this a Hail Mary to delay? Do you know people that believe that there's enough there for her to maybe toss that?
I think that this is interesting, the fact that she didn't discard that right away and is considering and holding hearings on it to hear both sides. And I think that that is only to the benefit of the Trump legal team. Again, pushing things back. They got 30 days in the Manhattan case with Alvin Bragg. They've got other things being pushed back based on the Supreme Court consideration of immunity. You know, I think their ideal hope is to push it past Election Day. You got to deal with it at some time. But the fact that that judge didn't discount the possibility that the Presidential Records Act changes the dynamic is significant for the Trump folks.
All right. I want to, before we move on, just bring up something about New York. And that is fascinating that the Southern District of New York, they claim the DA, Alvin Bragg, said, you know, for the longest time, for about a year, we've been asking the Southern District of New York to give us the paperwork that you had on Trump. I know you wanted to charge Trump. You didn't. Can I have your paperwork? Can I have the background? Can I have the interviews? Can I have the transcripts? And they delayed until recently. They just dropped it, according to Bragg's office, at his desk. So at the same time, the president's asking for a delay because he wants to wait on the immunity case. And now Bragg comes out and says, although the people are prepared to proceed on trial on March 25th, we do not oppose an adjournment in an abundance of caution and to ensure the defendant has sufficient time to review the new materials. We therefore notify the court that we do not oppose a brief adjournment not to exceed 30 days. Now, that's their idea for 30 days. But now the Trump team's got to look through all this material. I mean, these are not – Southern District of New York are pretty hard-nosed people. They know they're pretty bottom. What's going on here? How do you not get these courts to work with each other? How does this happen?
I don't know. And you're talking thousands of pages here. And it's also worth noting that that office didn't go forward with the charge.
Yes.
So they're looking at things that is, you know, evidence that they determined did not warrant moving forward. And, so one would think that in there is something that the Trump people could tap into.
All right. Brett, who do you have on your panel tonight?
I have no clue. I have my morning meeting in about 45 minutes.
Can we carry that live?
Yes. Yeah, we'll beam you in.
We're going to carry it live on the show. Got to blow breaks and everything. Special report on at 6. Brett Baer, thanks so much.
We'll see you.
All right. Listen, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Senator Pete Ricketts. He's on Foreign Relations, Environment, Public Works. Is the Senate going to take up the case of the TikTok either sell it or ban it that the House passed overwhelmingly. A lot to go over, including the latest on this Georgia case. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel. At a time when so many Israelis have lost their confidence in the vision and direction of their government.
That's Chuck Schumer calling for elections in Israel. It is stunning. It is totally inappropriate. I think it's disgusting because he's trying to get the Palestinian vote, the Muslim vote. Let's welcome in Senator Pete Ricketts. You're watching him probably on the app right now. He's Foreign Relations, Environment, and Public Works. Senator, your reaction to this statement?
It's absolutely horrible. It is just despicable that he's catering to the pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist wing of the Democrat Party by calling for elections in Israel. I mean, think about this. We hate it when other foreign countries interfere in our elections. Don't we make a big deal about that?
Yeah.
And now he's exactly doing the same thing. And we should be clear, he's doing this not because he cares about the elections in Israel, but he's really doing it because he's got a problem in his own party. He and the president are trying to distance themselves from what they're doing in Israel, which is we should support our ally Israel, but they're catering again to this pro-Hamas wing in the Democrat Party.
So, ironically, they want Netanyahu out. They think he's the problem.
Yeah, you know, Hamas is the problem.
Right. Benny Gantz, who would be running against, said, inappropriate. We do not want you saying anything about our elections. And they did a poll in Israel. I'm hardly an expert in Israeli politics. Do you know Netanyahu beats Benny Gantz? So what are you looking for?
Yeah.
What are you doing? This is just, but the impact, he is Jewish, the highest ranking Jewish politician in American history. I mean, where do you get that? Does politics mean that much to you?
Yeah, I mean, that is exactly what Schumer is all about. He's all about politics. I mean, you can see that in the way he plays politics on the floor of the U.S. Senate. I mean, they are all just about politics. And to your point, you know, we're getting involved in their elections, and it is detrimental to the cause. Because what do you think Hamas does every time they hear the Biden administration getting weak? Hamas goes, well, we don't need to negotiate.
Exactly.
We don't need to give up hostages because if I just wait long enough, America and Biden will back away from Israel and then I'll get everything I want.
Senator, the bill, the TikTok bill is in delay right now. It overwhelmingly passed the House, was in the Senate yesterday, and all of a sudden no one wants to take it up, it seems. The CEO of TikTok working the back rooms trying to get senators to his side. Where do you stand on the sell it or ban it?
Well, I really appreciate the bill because we need to take action against the Chinese Communist Party, and they have access to push their propaganda through TikTok here into this country. I mean, think about this also. We wouldn't tolerate the U.S. government having access to 170 million citizens' data, private data. Why are we allowing the Chinese Communist Party to have it?
The manipulation, I think, is real. I mean, do you think you're going to get an anti-Taiwan story front and center on that app? Do you think that if they understand our divisions, understand us because they got our personal data, what divides us in this country, are they going to fuel that divide? The algorithm allows that. Why do you think we get in these, in my view, why do we get in all these Palestinian Hamas protesters? Where did that come from?
Yeah, well, just think about this. Right after October 7th, why did Bin Laden's 10-year-old letter to America suddenly become a trendy thing on TikTok? You think that was coincidence? No way. That was pushed by the Chinese Communist Party to divide us.
And who's young? Well, everybody on TikTok, mostly 16 to 30, to 24. That's your whole next generation. Here's the CEO on Capitol Hill yesterday with our reporter, Cut One.
Sir, why won't ByteDance just sell the company? That would avoid a ban. Why wouldn't you just sell?
The bill is 12 pages long. We have looked at it. It is not feasible to do whatever the bill thinks it does within the
within the perimeter set out in the bill.
To divest the company?
So this bill, in all the details, you can go through the details. This is this would lead to the banning of the app in the country.
Mr. Chu, but it wouldn't if you just sell the company.
He's not going to divest, even though he's got plenty of buyers, including Steve Mnuchin.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, they're playing politics as well with this, right? They keep saying, oh, this is a ban, this is a ban. No, it's actually companies get sold and bought in this country all the time.
Right.
So maybe the Chinese communists don't like the marketplace, but that's what we do here in America.
I know like guys like Tom Cotton, Lindsey Graham. Actually, Lindsey Graham hasn't committed to it. Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio, they understand the danger. Do you? Are you going to vote against? Are you going to vote for this?
We absolutely need to get this done because – and this is where the president shouldn't just say he's going to sign it. He should say, I need a call on Chuck Schumer to put it on the floor because, again, we know that this is a risk for us. We got to take action.
But you know why he won't? Because he doesn't want to be the president that banned the number one app to this next generation of voters.
Well, I'm not
sure.
We
just gave free student loans.
The White House supposedly gave technical assistance to Gallagher as he was putting this bill together.
Good. I did not hear that. It's the first time I'm hearing
supposedly
this.
Supposedly, they didn't tell me that, but that's what I had heard, that they had provided technical assistance to try and make sure that it would be constitutional. Because you notice this is not targeting TikTok. It's about foreign adversary-controlled apps. So it's broader than just TikTok. And this is the point. We don't want to have our adversaries.
Right.
I mean, think about this also. Do you know if you want to own a television or radio station in this country, you have to certify that you are a citizen and not a felon, right? So
U.S. citizen. Murdoch had to become a U.S. citizen to buy the New York Post.
So here's the deal. So if we make citizens own our TV and radio stations, why are we letting the Chinese communists own an app that actually has a bigger distribution?
I understand the digital age just burst upon us, but this has been around since 2016. Why were there not rules in place about this? After all, media is on Facebook. Media is on you get it on Instagram, on Snapchat's got their own media service. These are American companies. But why was this rule not in place already?
Well, I got to tell you, I think one of the things that President Trump did is really raise the awareness of the dangers of Xi Jinping. I mean, this guy is a guy just after Mao's heart, right? He's a hardcore communist. We can see it in the actions he's taking, the repression he's done in China. And so I think it's really, you know, this came about in 2016, but really kind of our awareness that China was becoming a huge problem for us really started with President Trump. So I think it's taken a while for this awareness to really kind of get to us. I mean, things in democracies move slow. That's kind of the way we work around here. So
right.
It's just taking
But I want
to
make sure
here.
North Korea, I got to make sure Russia, foreign adversaries. And you got to be you have to be American to have the majority ownership and can't have an origination there. Because ByteDance, you could say it's its private company. But they have to, of course, answer to the Chinese government. If they want that intellectual property, it is theirs. And they're forbidden to sell it. That's why he believes it will die. The algorithm will not come with a purchase.
And actually, isn't that kind of the whole point, though? Because he's saying, like, well, again, the algorithm for TikTok is secret and it's in China. Yeah, that's the whole point. That's why we don't like you. That's why we don't
like you. Please make that point
access
to Rand Paul and others.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would certainly make sense. Listen, I just put the vote up and let the people decide. And then, listen, people will be mad at you, but this is a small sacrifice for the good of America. A lot of parents will be happy. All right, thanks so much, Senator Rickenstein. I know you have to go to Stuart Varney.
Yeah.
Don't let him beat you up, okay? Great to see you.
You won't. Thanks.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The President, Prime Minister Netanyahu's current coalition remains in power after the war begins to wind down and continues to pursue dangerous and inflammatory policies that test existing U.S. standards for assistance. Then the United States will have no choice but to play a more active role in shaping Israeli policy by using our leverage to change the present course.
That was Senator Schumer yesterday. And just before we get to Mark Thiessen, who's over in Arlington, Virginia, Fannie Willis is allowed to stay on the case to prosecute Donald Trump. She's embarrassed herself. Anybody who thought she had an ounce of integrity who watched that case knows it's out the window. They say Nathan Wade's got to go. If Nathan Wade doesn't go, and then, of course, the case is going to be – they're going to reexamine it. But they said – the actual lines are pretty interesting. They said – After receiving 2.5 days of testimony, during which the defendants were provided opportunities to subpoena and introduce other relevant material and evidence could muster, the court finds the defendants failed to meet the burden of proving that the DA acquired an actual conflict of interest in the case through her personal relationship and recurring travels with her lead prosecutor. The other alleged grounds for disqualification include forensic misconduct, also were denied. So she gets to stay in the case, and she is hardly a legal genius. Mark Thiessen, I think you agree with that assessment, that she is not the next coming of Effie Lee Bailey?
I think that's the understatement of the year, Brian. It's disgraceful that she's allowed to continue on the case. I mean, she's a grifter. She literally paid her lover money and then used that money that she was paying him to take luxury vacations while she was supposedly working hard to prepare the case. And he gets kicked off, but she doesn't. It's just the whole thing is just a disgrace.
The other thing that's important too.
Within a disgrace within a disgrace, because the case going forward is a disgrace. Her being in charge of it is a disgrace. The 91 indictments and all of the efforts to civil suits to bankrupt Trump and the legal warfare against him are a disgrace. So it's just one disgrace in a miasma of disgraces in our legal system today.
Right, which is disgraceful that we even have to bring this up before I get to something really important. But I'm just going to add this. Anybody who says that they're not coordinating with the White House, that was thrown out. When Nathan Wade's invoice came in, he wanted to be reimbursed for his meeting in Athens when he had to drive and go meet with White House counsel in Athens, Georgia. What were you doing? Didn't you go meet with the vice president? Fannie Willis goes and meet with the vice president when she denied ever doing it. That was found out to have happened. So don't tell me there's no coordination with the White House. And by the way, the White House put somebody into the New York case, which never should have been brought. And I think they're realizing they have no case. They're just hoping for a classic New York jury. But, Mark, it's maddening. I mean, people out there have to understand, whatever your feelings about Donald Trump, put it aside. They changed the law on the statute of limitations in order to bring the civil suit. They changed the law, which should have been a misdemeanor, to make it a felony in order to bring the New York Alvin Bragg suit. And then you can honestly say, as much as I think taking the documents was ridiculous, resisting giving them back was farcical, there's no way you read the Joe Biden 40-year disinterest in returning classified information and look at what Hillary Clinton did in her thing, knowing that they were never president at the time they were doing it, and think to yourself, there isn't at least the appearance of two tiers of justice. So that's what's stopping. And everything gets delayed. And CNN and MSNBC are so upset that they can't just get Donald Trump convicted already.
It's not just the appearance. So the fact that Joe Biden cooperated and Donald Trump obstructed, allegedly, the investigation is completely irrelevant to the underlying charges. So if Joe Biden was a murderer and he then cooperated with the investigation after getting caught and told the police where the bodies were buried and all the rest of it, that doesn't absolve him of the murder, right? you're still committed murder and you still would be prosecuted for the murder. The fact that you didn't obstruct justice might be prevent you from being charged with an additional crime or might be taken into account in sentencing, but it doesn't absolve you of the crime. So the fact that Joe Biden is not being prosecuted will not be prosecuted for the exact same crime that Donald Trump is being prosecuted for is just absolutely unbelievable. And put aside the court of law, in the court of public opinion, it just tells most people that there's a two-tier standard of justice. Now, Trump's obstruction is a separate thing, and I could understand if they didn't prosecute him for the underlying crime, but they prosecuted him for the obstruction. Okay, that might be an arguable thing. But you can't prosecute one president. And the only difference, the two differences between them, one, Donald Trump had more of a claim to have those documents because he was president and he had declassification authority, whereas Joe Biden took them when he was vice president and senator and had no business having them. So that's one level. And two, the second level is that Joe Biden is not being prosecuted because he's senile. That the jury would see him as cognitively impaired and therefore he couldn't be convicted. So Donald Trump gets prosecuted because he's not cognitively impaired, but Joe Biden doesn't? That's what our law system has come to. It's an absolute atrocity.
It is, and I hear it in your voice. It's so ridiculous. Let's go back to the serious stuff. When Chuck Schumer took to the floor of the Senate and called for new elections in Israel, essentially turning on maybe our premier ally in the world, I thought about you, and I was so glad you're on today, because this is so disgusting, as especially for a Jewish American, to put additional pressure and lessen the leverage that the Israelis would have on Hamas, who's been beaten senseless and hopefully finished off soon in Rafah. Your thoughts?
So there's so many levels to this. So Chuck Schumer is one of the people who was in 2016 wailing about how Donald Trump was an illegitimate president because Russia interfered in our election. And he seamlessly turns around and tries to interfere in Israeli politics and tell them who their leaders should be. Who the hell are you? Well, I mean, you know, it's like, what is it? You know, is Chuck Schumer going to retire and go work at the Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg after this? You know, election interference. I thought election interference bad. That was the Democratic line. Who the hell are we to tell the Israelis who their leaders are? Second, it's completely tone deaf. So, BB, once this is over and there's an election, in all likelihood, the Israeli people are not going to reelect Bibi to the prime ministership. But this would be akin to some foreign leader telling the Americans a few months after 9/11 that George Bush, they need to replace George Bush as president.
Absolutely.
Like, it's none of your damn business. The country rallied. Bush had 80% approval after 9/11, including people who opposed all of his policies, except they rallied around him because we had been attacked and he was leading the counteroffensive. That's what's happening right now. They've got a unity government and a unity cabinet that includes every political party. The entire country is behind them, and they need to prosecute this effort to eliminate Hamas. And we don't need Chuck Schumer questioning their decisions internally on how to organize themselves politically for this effort. And we also don't need Chuck Schumer or Joe Biden telling the Israelis how to organize themselves militarily to carry out this operation. This is all in the name of they think that Bibi is going too far. And so they don't like him to begin with. He's going too far in his military campaign. It's not just Bibi. It's everybody, the entire political, the unity government that includes all of Bibi's political enemies wants to go into Rafah. It's not like there's a peace movement in Israel that wants to have ceasefires and doesn't want to go into Rafah and doesn't want to go after Hamas, that if Bibi just got out of the way, that would change. They're all united behind this strategy. The only people who are against it are the Biden administration and Democrats, and they're against it because of Michigan, and that's it. That's the only reason.
I hope people see through it. But by the way, the Muslims, the Palestinians, who's ever in the Michigan area that voted uncommitted, they're not buying it. And they refuse to meet with White House officials when they want to explain themselves. What is there to explain?
There's more people in Michigan who support Israel than there are people who don't, who support Hamas. Like there was Mark Penn, I just had him on my podcast, What the Hell is Going On? And he went through his Harvard-Harris poll. I think the number is like 82% of Americans support Israel and 18% support Hamas. 70-something percent think that we should only have a ceasefire after Hamas has been eliminated and all the hostages have been returned. And I think 60-something percent support Israeli sovereignty over Gaza after the war is over. No one wants a Palestinian state. No one wants a two-state solution. No one wants a ceasefire except the pro-Hamas element, which has infected the Democratic Party. But that's a minority opinion. Why are you pandering to the pro-Hamas minority when there's a pro-Israel supermajority that you can appeal to?
Right.
People are not going to vote for you in Michigan because you're pandering to them.
Yeah, they're not stupid.
That's good politics.
Right. And by the way, I want to finally get a real number on casualties. How many Hamas fighters are dead? How many innocent people are dead? We keep going with 30,000 are dead, according to the Hamas Communications Division. I want a real number.
Brian, putting that, I want a real number too. But how many people did the RAF kill in Berlin? in the bombing of Berlin. I'm just watching Masters of the Air, which, by the way, everybody should watch on Apple TV. The whole story of the air campaign of World War II. How many people, civilians, did they kill in order to remove Hitler from power? I'm sorry. And the other thing is, we got to keep in mind, the Palestinian people are not innocent in all of this. They elected Hamas. If you look at the polls, the vast majority of them support October 7th.
Over 80%.
Just like the German people were not innocent in Hitler's crimes. They elected him. They supported him. You know, I'm sorry, but you brought this on yourself by supporting and electing terrorists. And we've got to eliminate the terrorists before we can have peace.
So Benny Gantz came out, and after saying some flowery things about the country, says the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is a friend of Israel, though he erred in his remarks. He plays an important role in assisting the state of Israel, including during these difficult times. Israel is a robust democracy, and only its citizens will decide its future and leadership. Any external interference on the matter is counterproductive and unacceptable. Good job, Benny Gantz. And I think that's good, you know, excellent on him. Here's what Speaker Johnson said. Cut 14.
And we want to speak very clearly and concisely to say that this is not only highly inappropriate, it's just plain wrong for an American leader to play such a divisive role in Israeli politics while our closest ally in the region is in an existential battle for its very survival. We need to be standing with Israel, and we need to give our friends and allies our full support.
So I could line up a whole bunch of Republicans who are outraged by it, including Senator Pete Ricketts, who was on right before you. From Nebraska. They can't believe it. And everyone sees politics in it. So what was the point? Are you just an idiot? You know, what are you doing? You're abandoning our ally. You're getting involved in another election. You're leading the president to maybe do something you're doing. And everyone sees the politics in it. And pandering to Muslims or the Arab community in certain states is an insult to them. They see pandering like we all do. Final thought about what's going on in TikTok. I know it's a big turn, but Senator Schumer, again, is going to have something else to think about. Is he going to bring that bill up in front of the Senate? And should they actually go ahead with the bill that would give them basically 6 months to sell the majority of TikTok?
Yes, 100%. And the proof of it is in the lobbying campaign by TikTok. So TikTok went out and put out an alert to all of its users, and suddenly all these crying teenage girls were calling members of Congress saying, you're going to take away my TikTok, I'm going to commit suicide, or whatever the heck it is. It's just, if you wanted to know that China has a line into the veins of every teenager in America, they can inject this digital fentanyl into their system and make them do what they want to do. Imagine if they were trying to do that with a campaign to stop us from imposing sanctions on China, or to stop, or to you know, oppose military or declaration of military action if they invaded Taiwan. Why would we allow the Chinese Communist Party to control the primary news source of most Americans who are under 30?
It's nuts.
I mean,
and wait a second, I have another hypothetical.
Like Fox News. And the CCP was able to tell us what to say and what not to say on this radio show? Would anybody put up with it?
You have to be an American citizen to own something like that. So the same thing should be with the apps. I have another scenario. What if that app was pushing pro-Palestinian stories and pro-Hamas stories? Might that result in countless rallies against Israel, a lot of anti-Semitism in the streets? Might they be doing that already?
They are.
Yes.
It is. It's happening. I mean, this is one thing, like, you know, I just use the analogy, would we allow the Chinese Communist Party to buy Fox News? Interestingly, Fox News, because it's a TV station and a radio station, can't read our keystrokes on our phones, can't collect user data in the same way. An app not only is a control, gives them control over propaganda flow into our system, they can collect information on everything that you're tracking, what you watch, what searches you are, and then target the messages to you, knowing what your preferences are. So it's a exquisite intelligence tool for opinion shaping, public opinion in the country. Why would we allow our number one enemy in the world to control that?
And Allison, I think Mark Thiessen brought his A game today, and very similar to what I would do if I ever got on his podcast. I would do something very similar.
you are going to bring your A game, and we are going to have you on very soon.
I know. Just take your time.
What do you want to talk about? Tell me.
I have nothing on my mind. I'm a blank slate. You got it. Go get him, Mark Thiessen. Read the Washington Post. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world. I think it's time for a shortened work week.
Can I ask you a question about that? It seems like Democrats want businesses to be taxed more, pay their workers more, lower prices, and now pay people not to work. How are businesses going to survive that?
I think we have a real problem in our tax system.
And that is Bernie Sanders. Always has problems with our tax system. Billionaires are the problem. And that was Hillary Vaughn letting Bernie Sanders know your 32-hour work week is going to hurt the economy, or asking questions about it. That's what he's proposing. And he had a bunch of people there, most of which were for the 32-hour work week, as if people would be more efficient. Look, I'm all for quality of life. But if you could do it, you do it. If you're an influencer and you make more money in one day and you don't want to make any more, go do it. You're a day trader. You don't have to work 32 hours. But you can't mandate a 32-hour work week. Also, if you are coming out of college and you got a job and you tell your boss, I'm working 32 hours, that's it. You could just say one thing. Just put quicksand. Just live your life in quicksand. You're never going to go anywhere. You will go reverse. And if someone said to me, you could only work 32 hours, I'd go, okay, on that job, then I'd go get another. Why? Because I don't think you get anything without hard work. You don't learn anything. You don't grow relationships. You don't make mistakes. You don't make improvements. 32 hours a week with 3 days off to go windsurfing is not a way to lay the groundwork for a successful career. That's not the American way. That's the Spain way. That's the French way. That's the increasingly socialist European way. And they might say, wow, isn't it great to have three-hour lunches? All right, for you. That's not how you get anywhere. That's not the American work ethic that builds a country. Bernie Sanders, you can have it. You're a socialist.
Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Yep. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan, but we're heard around the country, heard around the world. Wherever you are, you can take us with us. You always grab the app. On the bottom, it says watch. You just stream over until you see radio. And we're actually streamed on radio, too, so, and on Fox Nation. David Bonson's going to be here in a little while. David Bonson from the Bonson Group, a very successful CEO, and so is Master P, Percy Miller, who's also in studio right now. And we're going to get to him in just a moment. We are following this. Fannie Willis would be allowed to stay on Donald Trump's Fulton County case. They have to get rid of Nathan Wade. If they don't get rid of Nathan Wade, the ex-boyfriend, we think, the prosecutor, lead prosecutor, then it'll be a problem. But I can't imagine him sticking around. But a lot of people are upset. They said the guy, she flat out lied. He flat out lied. You got caught and you still get to stay. But that's what the judge ruled. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
Instead of having a collective driven name, image, and likeness, I thought a revenue sharing with name, image, and likeness would be a lot better system. We would be able to continue to support athletes and athletics in all sports.
That is Nick Saban. Last night with Brett, NIL debate. Are college sports, especially football and basketball, better because they get paid or forever broken? And can the government fix what's broken? Yeah, believe it or not, they're counting on the government.
Number two.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has all too frequently bowed to the demands of extremists. I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way.
Insane, shameful, and disgusting for the nation's top Jewish leader to take on the Senate floor and call for regime change in Israel, to strengthen Hamas's hand with hostage negotiations. It is despicable. And it just shows you that President Biden and the Democrats want to do one thing, maximize the Muslim, which is fine, Arab, which is fine, and the Palestinian vote. But it could cost them the Jewish vote or cost all their votes.
Number one.
But as long as they're owned by the CCP, that's why lawmakers are worried about that. What do you have to say for that?
It's not owned by the CCP. ByteDance is owned by global investors, and then the rest is owned by the founders and the employees. So there's no
CCP ownership.
It's a Beijing-based company. That's the issue. TikTok attack. The Senate takes a pause on forced sell legislation when it comes to TikTok. They're going to see if the Senate does indeed have the votes, if they'll vote at all. We're going to look at the status of the number one app in the nation and why it's suicidal to leave it in the hands of the Chinese-owned ByteDance company. We have no choice. So with me in studio, great to see you, Master P.
How you doing?
Great to see you. If you're not in New Orleans, you're in California,
yes,
travel
sir.
The country, myriad of businesses.
Yes.
All right. First off, congratulations. Your son's about to go to the University of Houston.
Yes.
In researching your background all over it, he got his first NIL contract with a yogurt, correct?
Yes.
So he's one of the top players in coming out of high school. What's that like for you?
I mean, it's pretty exciting for me as a parent. But my most important thing is knowing that he's an A student. So that's what I'm more proud of.
That's what's going to be sustained. That's what's going to sustain him.
I mean, when you look at basketball, you only last 4 to 5 years in the NBA. Then what? So you need something to fall back on. So in our family, we put God first, education, and family. Like, it's just that's what it is.
How many of your kids are living at home right now?
Well, right now I have three.
Three at home.
Yeah.
And then Mercy, who's a senior, he's going to be going off to Houston soon.
Yeah, University of Houston. I already have another son at Louisville playing basketball.
Does he have any NIL?
Yes, he had a great NIL deal.
So you never had that with your with Romeo, went to USC.
Yes.
Never had that.
I never had it even with myself. To be able to experience this to where, think about this, right? I know it's an imbalance right now, but they sell your jerseys at these universities, just like in the NBA. None of the kids make money off of that. When I played college basketball, I made $400 a month. And so now it's a big thing that these kids are making money, but if these kids are preparing to be NBA players, I mean, in college, you almost like an NBA player in college. Only thing you're going to school, getting an education.
You hope. And now people should know the chances of someone going pro.
Yes.
Everyone thinks, well, they're on national television. They're competing. What are the chances?
It's 10 million players trying to get 400 jobs. It's like hitting the lottery.
Yeah.
And so I think now college for a lot of these kids and their parents is the NBA. But they also get an education. So, but we just have to educate the parents and the kids for this. Because think about it, right? The coaches make millions of dollars. Some coaches make $5, $10 million to coach a college team.
Right.
I mean, should we not pay the coaches?
I hear you.
Because think about it, right? These kids really deserve this, but we have to figure out some kind of way how to educate the families, the kids, the coaches. I know that it's billionaires out there that went to these universities. So if they pour money into these universities, it's going to be another imbalance on that end where you're going to get the best players at these universities.
Great point. So a couple of things.
Yes.
They say, the coaches say right now with football and basketball, the first question the kids ask is, how much do I get paid? How weird is that, knowing that you got $400 as basically a stipend?
Yes.
And at 17 years old, you go, who could pay me more? And if you don't pay and play me, I go into the portal, and I'll go somewhere else. And I know Rick Pitino just said, it's frustrating for me. Some of my best players barely played for 2 years. Now those players would say, coach, if I don't go in, I'm out of here. Already got some interest from some other teams. Now the recruiting happens almost while these kids are on the other team, so to speak.
Yeah, well, you know what? We have to be able to love the game. Like, you can't cheat the game of sports. It's a physical game. So you're not going to be able to cheat this game. Maybe some of these players will get a little money and think that's the way out. But if you don't still put the same work ethics into these into your craft, you won't be around anyway.
But so, is it about team or is it about the individual?
Well, I mean, so when you look at sports, it's competitive, right? Everybody on the team is not going to the NBA. So at the end of the day, you have to know you got to have some sense of selfishness in this also. So like I said, also the coach, right? They got some coaches make $100,000. Some coaches make $2 million. Some coaches make $10
million. Yep.
Right? When we talk about Rick Pitino, like, what is Rick Pitino's salary? Like, Rick Pitino is not going there for nothing.
So here's what Nick Saban said. This is his.
But how much do Nick Saban make?
I think he was making over $10 million.
Okay, so
and then let alone the two contracts and all the other contracts and the appearances.
Do Nick Saban want all the coaches to make the same amount of money he make?
Great point. That's a great point. Cut 20.
Guy like Bryce Young, who, you know, had several national commercials. They didn't come from a collective. They were because he created a brand for himself, which is what name, image, and likeness was supposed to be. And I think that should still exist, you know, for all players, but not just a pay for play system like we have now, where whoever raises the most money in their collective can, you know, pay the most for the players, which is not a level playing field. And I think in any competitive venue, you want to have some guidelines that gives everyone an equal opportunity to have a chance to be successful.
So he's saying, put the NIL here, give everyone a flat fee, offensive linemen, wide receivers, quarterbacks. So you're competing on a level playing field.
But everybody is not the same. Everybody's not going to be Kobe Bryant. Everybody's not going to be LeBron James. Every coach is not going to be Nick Saban. So you're never going to be able to do that.
Right. That's socialism.
Yes.
But the salary caps, though, right?
Yes.
The salary caps in sports.
But a lot of these kids deserve this because, think about it, right? They done made so much money in these colleges. I mean, we all been to college, so we know it, right? These colleges and universities have made so much money off of these kids for the last
50 years.
Yeah, 50 years. Say 50 years, right? Now, the kids are getting an opportunity now to actually benefit off going to college. So it's going to be mixed emotions. Like, even my era and your era feel like, well, we didn't make that in college. Now, I was looking at one of the basketball players was saying, well, they sold my jersey, and then I got in trouble for taking a meal back in the days, right? They got kids got put out of school for taking meals back in the days, and now you can make millions of dollars.
I know.
And so, but change has to come. We have to be prepared for change.
Do you believe there should be a structure? For example, I know if the Giants only have so much money, if they're going to get a team, it's not like in the 80s.
Yeah.
The 49ers could sit there and pay everybody, Montana and Young, to be on the same team. It didn't matter. Now, all of a sudden, there's rules. You know, in baseball, the luxury tax. How do you not destroy the game and the student-athlete principle and yet give the kids
to have integrity. You got to get up in the morning knowing that the world is watching me. And if I don't produce, then none of this stuff is going to matter anyway. This is it for you anyway. So you're going to be transformed from team to team.
What do you tell your son?
I tell my son to love what you're doing, be passionate about what you're doing, and believe in yourself, knowing that you're going to have ups and downs. You're going to go through ups and downs. Some days you might not perform as well as you want to perform, but you got to take these as learning lessons and getting better. So I tell both of my kids that are playing sports. I always tell Hersey and Mercy, I'm saying, look, stay focused. You have to love the game because that's the way you get better.
Right.
Like, is the money going to come? But the blessing's going to come when you do what you need to do.
So a couple of things are happening, too. And life's not, you know, you could say life's not fair or this is the way it is.
Yes.
Because of what the Mannings have done, they have a son in Arch Manning who has barely taken a snap.
Yes.
And he's making $5 million.
Yes.
You have Bronny James because of what his dad did. He's at USC playing 7 minutes a game, and I think he earns the most NIL.
Yes.
Kind of because of what they're, you know, what their famous family and the potential that they could have. And you might have a player that's better than Bronny James, which there are, that doesn't even have interest from Gatorade or Pepsi or anyone like that.
But that's life. That's life. Like, I know a lot of people make this gripe about Bronny James, but I want to see that family make history, whether people believe how talented he is. And I mean,
you want to see him play in the NBA?
I want to see him play in the NBA.
He should not go to school this year. He should not go to the NBA. He's not ready.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, who are we to say that? Because he have a whole summer to get better. His dad is one of the best players in the world.
He had the heart issue.
Yeah, he had. So we gotta have some leanness on him.
But the thing that you're passionate about is equal opportunity.
Yes.
You want to level the playing field.
Yes.
For everybody.
Yes.
And you feel as though in some cases with corporate America, minorities are locked out. And you felt that way.
Yeah, I feel like it's an imbalance when you talk about bridging the wealth gap. And you look at where we are now and where we're trying to go at, because what Martin Luther King fought for back in the days was racism, civil rights. What I fight for today is, how do we change that wealth gap? Because think about this, right? You have Patti LaBelle pies. Patti LaBelle pie has been around for 8 years.
Yep.
Right? So Patti LaBelle took a 10% deal, and that company has made $200 million today. So they use her name and likeness. If you want to talk about this, right? Put her face on those pies, which she's well respected, but she got 10%. That means she got $20 million out of $200 million. Where do the other $180 million go at when they're promoting this on her name and likeness? And so I have to educate our culture and our people to that. Yeah. And saying, and why did that brand stay in Walmart for 8 years, even when it wasn't selling that first? Why do you think?
Because they had ownership in it.
Who?
Did Walmart have ownership in it?
Walmart executive started that brand. They went found it.
There you go.
And so we have to change that, I'm saying.
And then the thing is, Jim Brown always told me this. He goes, forget about black coaches. I want black owners.
Yes.
And that's the key.
So
right?
I want black CEOs in these Fortune 500 companies.
Absolutely.
Because we make a tenth of 1%. And so I'm
and you meet with them, and you know this,
yes.
And they talk to you.
But even farther, right? How many black billionaires are there? They're only 16.
Wow.
And it's 3,000.
Let's take a break, come back, talk more about this, because that's what you're passionate about. Education,
yes.
Opportunity.
Yes.
That's it. You don't want special rules.
No.
You want the same rules.
I want whatever.
Level the playing field.
Just level the playing field.
Just tell me the rules and you'll
win.
That's
it. And give us opportunity to win.
Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Percy Miller here, Master P, self-made multimillionaire, who is his probably greatest success is what his kids have done, being great people, and not just athletes. So, Percy, you said for the first time in a long time, you believe that people really want to level the playing field.
Yes.
Especially these white executives you're dealing with.
Yes, so the difference is, right, when Mr. Walton was in, when he created Walmart, right? When you look at what he created, it was all about the people.
Right.
I feel like we're getting away from that now. It's all about who these executives are. They want to run their business the way they want to run it. I had to get rid of family members that wanted to run my business the wrong way, and they wasn't thinking on the principles and the integrity that I built my business on. So when I start looking at, think about it, even when you talk about diversity, don't just talk about diversity during Black History Month. Actually live it in these corporations. Give people real opportunities. I ask people to challenge some of these big corporations, whether it's Walmart or whatever. I'm saying, how many billionaires have Walmart created for us, minority-owned brands,
right,
and companies? Like, let's do the research on that. That's what I say. We have to change that and do what's fair for everybody. So for me, with my business and my brand, I have white consumers coming to me. They fighting for me just as well as the black consumers, where they want to see change. They want to see growth. They like, if when we sell these cereal.
Snoop cereal is
a black-owned company, right? But cereal is sold to mostly black consumers. We're the number one consumer of cereals. And then it's Latino and go down. So you're talking about you making billions of dollars, in which great value was created off of cereal. It now is an $87 billion company that sells everything. That's why I tell people all the time, Brian, this is bigger than cereal. This is bigger than cereal. You only see one thing, because some people might say, oh, this is they're selling sugary cereal. No, we're not selling sugary cereal. We're putting cereal into the marketplace, getting the shelving space, and then creating so many other avenues of product. When we talk about breakfast, we never say we was the king of cereal. We're the king of breakfast.
And I walked through only a minute and a half, but I walked through the supermarket with you. You got products,
yes.
You got snacks, you got everything. And you notice, because some of these major companies don't own you,
yes,
they're trying to push you in the back.
Yes.
So now you're suing.
Yes.
You're suing Post, right?
Yeah, and Walmart.
And saying, you better put us up front and let's do a discovery and find out.
Well, so I want to get this straight. I'm not suing them. Broder's Foods, which is our company, and Snoop is not suing them. It's Broder's Food. But Snoop been dealing with something. He lost his brother. So I'm going to have to sit down with these guys and say, you know what? If you guys want to do the right thing, we can sit down. But if you don't, then
going to court.
We going to court, and people all over the world are standing up for us. They protest, and they want change. I mean, when you look at it, right, we come a long way, but we still got a long way to go. So I'm not fighting for the past. I'm fighting for the future.
I know.
We're going to change this.
And you have as great athletes as your kids are, they're students first, which is, I think, it's important.
Yes.
Percy, always great to see you. We're honored when you come by, when you visit to New York.
Thank you always
outdress me, and it hurts my feelings.
Come on, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So if we had 6% inflation last year, 7% inflation, and now we have 4% inflation, that's 10% inflation. So if you take a basket of groceries at the beginning of 2020, just a simple basic basket that cost $100, it costs well over $125 today because those 4% 1 year and 7% 1 year and 7% the next year, they add up. They're cumulative. So there's a huge cumulative effect inflation.
So when people are being told, consumers, you're wrong, inflation's heading. No, they're right.
They're completely
it is
right.
Actually
they're completely
expensive.
Right. And what they're more right about is we at least finally have gotten to the position where wage growth is faster than inflation. But we had not been there till the last few months.
Yes, that is Gary Cohen, who played a key role in tax reform for President Trump's administration, and that's spelling it out simply about what inflation's doing. What people say, you know, I don't really see my bill going down that much, but they say inflation went from 9 to 3. Why am I not feeling it? And he simply explained it, because it compounds, it doesn't decrease. Joining us now to discuss this is David Bonson from the Bonson Group. David, great to see you.
Good to see you.
Don't you think that's important for just to explain to the people that you're not going crazy, that inflation might be heading in the right direction, but it's not, we haven't forgiven where we were?
Yeah, so the two things that I think people need to understand is, first of all, this has always, always, always been true. Inflation compounds all the time, and prices are always going up cumulatively. It's just that we don't notice it when it's 2 to 3%, and we notice it when it's 4 to 7%. So that isn't new. It's just that we had those couple years after the supply chain shut down where it was worse than normal. People felt it. The second piece to me is wages. And I think it's an important point Gary made at the end. Wages have grown too, but they hadn't grown with prices. Now they have. I think it's going to be interesting how this plays out in the campaign season.
So your thoughts right now about the fact that people are wondering about rates. Has inflation slowed to the point where you could feel good that possibly rates might be going down?
Yes.
The market doesn't seem to believe that.
Well, the market is up 8% this year, and so the market most definitely believes.
But not in response to the last inflation number, right?
No, the market is up. After each inflation number, the market went down that day and up the next day and then up the next month. So it's up 8% in the first 10 weeks of the year. At the beginning of the year, the market was expecting 6 rate cuts. Now it's only expecting 3, and yet the market is still up 8%.
What do you think it will do? What should it do?
The Fed should cut rates before the end of the year because it has it too tight right now, and this inflation was never primarily Fed-driven.
Do you worry about it being political, that clearly at the Fed that they're worried about Joe Biden losing?
Not even a little bit. I don't think they want Joe Biden to lose. I think the Fed is a political animal. But if the Fed was in the fix here for Biden, they would have been cutting rates last year. There is nothing they can do to help Biden about the economy at this point. They start cutting in June, July. And they think that's going to make a big difference in the election. The lesson of history is very clear, Brian. The economic narrative is baked in a year or two beforehand. Biden's going to win or lose based on his opponent, but he is not going to win based on the economy.
What did you take from the budget that he submitted this week?
I mean, obviously, it's not serious. They have no intention of it becoming law. For them to dare say they budget on a $1.8 trillion deficit is outrageous. And yet it's really a campaign precedent. They're campaigning on class warfare.
So I want to get to what Bernie Sanders says, the 32-hour work week, but I do want to talk about this fallacy that successful people don't pay taxes. And it really bothers me. This is what Gary Cohen said when it was thrown at him. Cut 33.
I think you've got to take one little step back here. A billionaire is a measure of net worth. It's not a description of their taxable income. Mm-hmm. You could be a billionaire and have no taxable income. You could not have $1 billion and have a high taxable income. So when you look at the way
because
people
it
are...
Because could be you're just sitting on assets.
You're just sitting on assets. And you could be sitting on illiquid assets. You could be sitting on liquid assets. We do a very good job in this country of taxing income. That's what the Constitution talks about. The Constitution talks about taxing your income. Mm-hmm. There is no income in this country unless you buy a tax-free bond that doesn't get taxed at a minimum of 20%, whether it's interest or dividends or capital gains. So there's no billionaire in this country that has income that is not paying at least 20%.
And it really bothers me because I think success should be lauded. If you're cheating, you're cheating. You're going to get caught. But said they say the top 10% pay 70% of all the tax revenue in this country that funds everything that we do. And yet they're vilified from the State of the Union address to Bernie Sanders in the halls yesterday.
There's so many lies going on at once here, I don't even know where to start. The top 10% pay 70%, top 1% pay 37%. And the thing that never gets discussed is the usage of services. There's only one demographic that is paying less than the percentage they're receiving of government spending. It's the middle class. So they say we can't raise cut taxes on the middle class, and I don't want them to raise taxes on the middle class. But they say that's off limits, but they are the ones disproportionately receiving more than they're paying. It's the upper class. And again, the class warfare is why, but at least tell the truth. You can say we want you to pay more because you have it. Remember President Obama said that. He goes, yeah, the capital gain tax, it comes down to fairness. We just think you have so much, we want you to pay more. At least just say that. But don't say they're not paying their fair share. To your point, it's an outrageous lie. But President Biden in the State of the Union address approached it with the business tax. He said the corporate income rate was a big cut for millionaires and billionaires. It's a total lie. The people who benefited from the corporate income rate going from 35 to 21, from one of the highest rates in the world to a more moderate medium rate, were wage earners, people getting a paycheck. The companies had more money to give raises, to pay bonuses, to hire more people. It's one of the reasons unemployment has stayed so low. If I were President Biden, I'd say thank you and go on my way, because the low business tax that President Trump passed essentially has helped the employment situation now. By the way, everybody knows this. They all know it. Politically, I understand why they can't say it, but I'm just here to call balls and strikes. Economically, a lower business income tax helps hire people and pay them.
I mean, are we getting to the point where people are going to start taxing wealth?
Well, it will never pass, and it isn't constitutional, and it doesn't raise any revenue. We've been taxing wealth for years. It's called the estate tax. You know how much it raised last year? $18 billion.
Okay, where is the estate tax at right now?
40%, which was passed by President Obama. And then what President Trump did is double the amount that can pass on. President Obama raised it quite a bit, too, after he got reelected, and it didn't even require a vote of Congress because President Bush's tax cuts were going to go away. They were going to what's called sunset. President Obama pushed it higher. Why would he do that? Because he knows this stuff doesn't raise any revenue. So Larry Summers, who was economic advisor to President Obama, was Treasury Secretary with Bill Clinton. This is no conservative Republican. He wrote an op-ed in The Washington Post saying the wealth tax is a disaster because it doesn't raise revenue. 17 European countries tried it. 15 got rid of it. It's an overwhelming statistic.
But also fundamentally, people think that you get rich. Don't understand there's a reason why people get rich. They're not cheating. They're not working the system. They understand it. So whatever reaction, whatever action a government takes, smart people are going to take an action too. They're going to put their money in a place that's not going to be taxed.
And then you're going to artificially distort markets. You're going to give people incentive to run a stock up throughout the year, but then tank the stock at the end of the year because you're getting taxed on unrealized movement. But you remember that person, I think she's in prison now, that Theranos company, Elizabeth Holmes, and Forbes put her on the cover, a billionaire. So they're going to tax her $1 billion for $1 billion net worth, but then she's now worth zero. So how do you get that back? Do you get losses and refunds around unrealized movement? And I think the other piece to this is how much it incentivizes people to lie about the value of a business. What about a family that owns 24 car washes in the Midwest, things like that?
When we come back, I want you to tackle this. and that is Bernie Sanders is getting much more praise than I ever thought, and I'm disturbed by it, for his proposal of a 32-hour work week. Some people pushing back on me and saying, Brian, it's quality of life. It's work balance. Well, if you give people 4 days, they'll be more productive. I'm not saying that they don't have any merit in that. I'm saying that in life, you never get forward anywhere by working less, that I know of. Let's talk about it when we come back.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're here today because for 84 years, there's been no reduction in the standard work week.
People are tired. Workers are already finding ways to rest at work. They are surfing the internet. They are just slowing down. They are stepping away just to get the energy to get through the workday. I'd rather just give people back their time so they can properly rest.
There is no statistical evidence to merit a nationwide mandate of a 32-hour work week. And in fact, there's clear evidence against it.
I think COVID made people wake up and realize what's important in life. I believe it's a fact that people have woke up and they've decided, I'm not going to leave my home for $12 an hour when I can't even afford to pay the bills.
So that's some of the reaction yesterday from the hearing that Bernie Sanders brought up. Why wouldn't a socialist bring that up? Work 32 hours, get paid the same. David Bonson with us. His book is now out. It addresses this directly, full-time, Work and the Meaning of Life. David, welcome. Perfect to tackle this. Where do you stand? If I put you in front of Bernie Sanders yesterday, what would you have said?
Well, I would hopefully be able to contain myself because this just absolutely infuriates me, and I usually am a pretty calm guy. This will ruin our country. How's that? And I don't say stuff like that. I do. I never one of these people that says the next election will ruin the country. A 32-hour work week would, because the American ethos is driven by entrepreneurialism. It's driven by risk-taking. It's driven by a meritocracy. We celebrate people who work hard. If you pass a law that people can only work 32 hours, then not only do you add and subsidize to the thing that's really hurting us most, which is purposelessness and hopelessness, but there is no way the most productive people in society are going to do it. You think that the Elon Musks and the future Elon Musk are going to work 32 hours a week? I would work 32 hours a day if the math would line up.
Right. If you see yourself in your job, too, if you love what you're doing, that's another thing. Fundamentally, wouldn't that help?
And I understand that some people have jobs they don't like. But is the solution then that last comment about, well, people realize during COVID what's important in life? What? OK, you tell me what's important in life. Your family? Does that not connect to how hard you work? Your children? Do you want to model for them that you're a lazy bum that doesn't go to work because you're mad at your boss? People produce goods and services that meet the needs of humanity because it drives economic growth. It makes a better life for them and their family. And it's what God put us on earth to do. That is the whole point. Why is the government a party to how much I'm going to work and not work? If we were going to have any mandate at all, it should be for 6 days shalt thou work and do all thy labor.
Right. And put it this way, the things that you get out of work, when you go to work, the people that you meet, the people that you mentor, I'm not getting paid enough. Fine. What's the goal? To make your top salary ever at 22 years old? No. Get on a path. And if you can't pay your bills, go get another job.
But see,
on top of that, if you make me work 32 hours, I'm going to go find another job. I'm not going to go water skiing for 3 days.
And what was so immoral about what that guy said is, oh, people realize I'm not going to get out of the house during COVID. I'm making $12 an hour. How are you going to get to 30 an hour by staying home?
Yes.
What are you doing to advance yourself, your skills, your value, the service you deliver to others? That we're going the wrong direction with this, Brian. That's why I wrote this book. We need full-time work. The happiest people are people who work hard and produce. It gives self-worth. What Arthur Brooks calls it, earned success. It's part of the dignity that we have as human beings.
Right. Here is Bernie Sanders expanding on his school of thought. Cut 24.
We work longest hours of any people in the industrialized world. I think it's time for a shortened work week.
Can I ask you a question about that? It seems like Democrats want businesses to be taxed more, pay their workers more, lower prices, and now pay people not to work. How are businesses going to survive that?
I think we have a real problem in our tax system.
And he went on to say Jeff Bezos doesn't pay enough taxes.
Well, so Jeff Bezos will be in the top 10 of biggest taxpayers in American history. So Bernie Sanders should say, I'd like to thank Jeff Bezos because I want more revenue from rich people. And Jeff Bezos is one of the biggest taxpayers ever. The biggest taxpayer in American history is Elon Musk. He's big. He's written bigger tax checks than anyone ever. And they tweet and say the same kind of nonsense about him. So at some point, they're probably going to need to say thank you to these people and quit demonizing them. What's the total taxes raised from every person who's ever worked from Amazon? All the capital gains Amazon's ever demonstrated, all the different revenue of every source throughout the whole kind of ecosystem of the economy that connects to Amazon. See, you can't have your cake and eat it too. These are the companies that are enhancing quality of life for Americans and creating a lot of wealth for workers. But Amazon's a huge company. Let's just talk regular small business. He wants to go after them too. They make millions of dollars running a company. Maybe they're not Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, but they're a rich guy. Bernie wants to go after them, too. Our country doesn't work hating rich people.
Yeah, I know. Tell that to whoever wrote the State of the Union address. Cut 23.
Within a very few years, automation can and should make possible a four-day work week. The reduction of the work week to 35 or 30 hours in the coming decade can be an important shock absorber during the transition to the widespread use of automation. It can both reduce the impact of sharp rises in output and increase the manpower requirements in industry and commerce.
Boy, that's an economically ignorant thing to say. Why? With more hours available, you should have greater output. The idea of better technological efficiency, last I checked, the wheel was pretty good. The fire was pretty good. And then the entire Industrial Revolution. It gave us the ability to do more output. The digital revolution should give us the ability to do more output. And we can do it more efficiently, and everyone's for that. But I'll tell you what you'll get more of if you go down to 30 hours a week. You're going to get more drug and alcohol abuse. You're going to get more broken homes.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a problem of people that, oh, if I worked 30 instead of 40 hours, I'd be a better husband or a better wife.
Right.
It doesn't exist.
But you do tackle the biggest issue in your book. When you wrote full-time work and the meaning of life, what did you realize? Did you always have the balance right?
Yeah, again, I don't like the word balance, Brian, because I can't say it to my wife. I can't say, hey, I need a marriage work balance here. Let me hang around you and talk to you a little less. To me, there is a wisdom that comes through life that some days I got to stay late at the office. I got a project. I can't get to my kid's game today. Other days I'm going to leave early. I have my school play or some kind of function with my children. Everybody balances in a practical sense, but the idea of treating our life like it's a closet, like here's the shirt section, here's the this, you can't compartmentalize that way. It ebbs and flows. It's part of being a grown-up. And work-life balance is a concept that, to me, infantilizes people. You can't make a formula out of this.
Can you get elected today by telling people work harder? Be productive, be success, go out and compete?
Maybe not. That would mean we get the leaders we deserve. It may be the people don't want to hear it. I do know this, it's worth a try. I am always a big believer in telling voters the truth, even when they don't want to hear it. And I don't think this has to be done condescendingly. I don't think you have to talk down to people. But I think there's a message of hope in what you guys like you and I are saying here. I'm not telling people, buckle up and start working harder. I think that. But what I'm saying is there's joy in working hard.
Right.
You achieve things in life that right now are frustrating, that later you're going to feel rewarded.
But if you don't have that frustration, you're never going to feel the feeling of accomplishment.
That's right.
Because it looks like it comes too easy.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, David. Congratulations on the book, Tackling the Biggest Issues Today. It's called Full-Time, Work and the Meaning of Life, at David Bonson's, where to find out more. Keep it here with Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget One Nation. Coming up Saturday, 9 p.m. on the Fox News Channel. I'm taking attendance.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. So much going on throughout the show, and we'll keep you up to date with it. And we saw some things with the Trump trials yesterday, and we saw some movement there, and especially in With the documents case, one of the motions was denied. The second one's being examined. And in the New York case, Alvin Bragg goes, hey, you know what? If you want to give me 30, if I want to, if you guys really want 30 more days, you can have it. Really? What happened? A whole bunch of documents got dumped. I want to talk to Shannon Bream about that, along with the Fannie Willis opportunity she has to stay in the case. And if she should, in fact, take it. I'm really disappointed in this judge. Everybody knows these two, Nathan Wade and Fannie Willis, lied. I have no idea why he didn't rule that they both belong off the case. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Instead of having a collective-driven name, image, and likeness, I thought a revenue sharing with name, image, and likeness would be a lot better system. We would be able to continue to support athletes and athletics in all sports.
Yep, the NIL debate. Are college sports getting better because some of these players are getting paid? Or is it broken? And can the government fix it? I think they have to.
Number two.
The fourth major obstacle to peace is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has all too frequently bowed to the demands of extremists. I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way.
Shameful and disgusting for the nation's top Jewish leader to take on the Senate floor and go for a regime change in Israel. Can you imagine if one of our allies hopped out, maybe Macron, and said, it's time for the people of America to reelect Joe Biden or to reelect Donald Trump? You would be offended even if that was your guy. That's how offended I am, and that's how wrong it is. That country's at war. They need to know that they're allies with them. Senator Schumer is worried about his political future and that of his party.
Number one.
But as long as they're owned by the CCP, that's why lawmakers are worried about that. What do you have to say for that?
It's not owned by the CCP. ByteDance is owned by global investors, and then the rest is owned by the founders and the employees. So there's no CCP ownership.
They have the back door, and you know it. TikTok attack. The Senate takes a pause on the forced sell legislation as the CEO sprints around Capitol Hill, hoping to drum up votes. We look at the status of the number one app in the nation and why it's suicidal to leave it in the hands of the Chinese-owned ByteDance. Let's bring in, if we can, Shannon Bream. Shannon, welcome back.
It is my pleasure to be with you, Brian.
Shannon, first off, something political. Do you believe that Senator Schumer will put the House bill on the Senate floor?
The TikTok bill?
Yep.
I don't know. You know, we have talked to Democrats, Republicans alike, senators many, many times. They have told us we're going to get this thing done. I think there's a ton of pressure to move forward, and especially since the White House has indicated the president would sign it. I don't know. I think ultimately there's such a public spotlight on this thing that it gets to the floor, and the Senate has to figure it out.
I think it has to get on the Senate floor. It'll be a tougher vote. But, I mean, how can anybody who looked at those intelligence hearings and heard the heads of the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, the DNI come out and say it's a threat? Chinese are using this information to also foment friction and fracture in society in America. I mean, the best example is what they did is when it was attempted to be banned, they told everybody to go write your congressman.
Right. And what they told everybody and what they're telling everybody on TikTok is it is a ban, which we know it's not. And the CEO was chased all over Capitol Hill yesterday. Aisha and Hillary Vaughn, all our reporters were all over it saying, hey, listen, lawmakers say it's not a ban. They say your parent company needs to divest of any attachments, ownership to the Communist Party, to the Chinese government. But TikTok can stick around. So you're telling your people who are having complete meltdowns that it's a ban, but you're not telling them the truth, which is TikTok could completely stay operational in the U.S. if you would agree to divest.
All right, let's move over to the news that broke a short time ago, and that said Fannie Willis gets to stay on the case, on the case in Fulton County if she gets rid of Nathan Wade. There's no doubt she's just going to get rid of Nathan Wade, right?
I can't imagine that she would do anything else, because otherwise the other alternative is getting rid of her entire prosecutorial team. And I just cannot imagine that she would do that, because if that happens, then this is out of her hands. It's taken to another DA somewhere else in the state, gets put on the case and gets to start it from scratch. I just can't imagine she would make that choice.
So, Shannon, I don't know if you had a chance. You've been on television constantly since this broke, but it's 23 pages.
Yes.
And one of a couple of things that stand out for me is that they said, don't love the conduct, but the defense was failure to prove how it really affected the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that stood out to me is he did say that speech, which we all knew, at that at Martin Luther King Church, bringing up that race was involved in this, was wrong. Mm-hmm. And again, in my view, not yours perhaps, she lied. She said Mike's statement had nothing to do with this case. Come on. Mm-hmm. Had everything to do with the you were playing the race card.
Yeah, everybody knew. And, you know, he breaks this down in that 23-page order and says, listen, she didn't mention any defendant by name. She didn't give away secret information. But what she did do, in his words, were legally – it was legally improper. He says providing this type of public comment creates dangerous waters for the district attorney to wade further into. You know, because people understand exactly what she was talking about and the claims that she was making. I mean, that's the judge's determination. And – you know, it was front and center during these hearings we've had over the last few weeks about this case. And he said it was legally improper. That's his finding.
So the decision to put her on the stand and then, of course, for her now to stay on the case. Tactically, if you're the defense and this is 18 defense, you know, the defense teams, but most of all, the president, are you kind of happy being that she's displayed her incompetence? Or is it, does she really just step out of this and put prosecutors in charge?
Well, the thing is, when she came, as we all saw, very angry, running down to that courtroom and put herself on the stand and was very combative with the attorneys and was just very upset, I don't think you ever want to show the defense that kind of emotion because they know she's provocable at this point. You've also got this issue that the entire jury pool in Atlanta and surrounding areas has seen all of this. I mean, it's going to be difficult, and the Trump team and the other co-defendants are going to have a lot of arguments to make about potential jurors and who can actually be seated for this thing and be impartial. They've now heard all the allegations about Wade and the travels and the relationship and the, you know, cell phone pinging and the, you know, there's been a lot out there. It's going to make it tougher in a lot of ways to move this case forward. And it's going to expose, you know, her level of ability as a prosecutor, her decision to do thing is this thing is RICO, which we know all the experienced RICO producer prosecutors we've heard from said, I never would have done this. It's way too complex. I wouldn't have done it this way. So there are a lot of questions and I think a lot of material for the co-defendants in this case to potentially try to use in their defense against her.
So, I mean, it's so complicated now. And people look at this case and they say, well, anyone say, well, we're going to give that state case. It's unpardonable and it's so airtight. You got tapes. Really? You just look at the people prosecuting them. There's other people with points of views on that tape, not just what CNN says they say. So that's number one. Now you look at the New York case. Alvin Bragg said, I will take the delay for 30 days, but that's it. Why? Because a whole bunch of papers got dumped in his desk. It would be dumped on the defense's desk about the previous examination and the decision not to indict from the Southern District of New York. How if someone dropped all these pages on your desk, for how long would you demand that you need in order to examine what exactly is now a part of this case?
Well, I mean, the Trump team's asking for 90 days. The fact that Bragg, without even arguing about it, it's like, okay, we'll give you 30. I think that they're going to end up getting more than that, tens of thousands of pages. That, by the way, the Trump defense team asked for a year ago. This is not something that just 5 minutes ago they're like, oh, here's a delay tactic. Let's ask for these documents. They asked for them that long ago. So if they're just now getting turned over, I think the Trump team has a very valid argument to go into court, and Bragg knows it, which is why he's at least offering the 30 days, knowing he's probably going to lose a lot more than that.
So you have that in delay. What about the second motion in Miami with the documents case?
Yeah, we're standing by because there are actually seven different motions to dismiss in that case. So, you know, we heard from Judge Cannon on one of them yesterday saying, like, doesn't meet the level. We're not going to do that. But, yeah, she's got the second one that they actually heard arguments about yesterday. So that could come at any time as well. But behind that, there are five other motions to dismiss on different grounds. So that case looks like it is going to plod along very slowly as well. Not on a fast track. I mean, a lot of what's happened to this point has been very quick, but there's always with a big federal criminal trial, there are always pretrial motions that take a lot of time. And so that's not unusual. It could really slow this thing down.
But it's on a breakneck pace. We would never, if this is just a normal white collar crime, we would never be on this type
no,
of pace.
You would not.
Period.
You're exactly right. And so, and the Supreme Court stuff too. People are like, ah, it's taking so much time. It takes years to get there. They've taken things up with relation to these Trump cases within days and weeks. So it really is very fast tracked at that level too.
So I know it's going to be a huge legal bill. It'd be a great time to get some type of legal insurance should anybody be in trouble. If you are in it, and they changed two laws with statute of limitations in order to try the president civilly. They changed the rules that said change what the president may or may not have done from a misdemeanor to a felony. That's how Alvin Bragg got himself a case, just changed things on the fly. So when you look at the big picture, the president is in a major fight all across the board. But it's not a bunch of losses. And I'll tell you what, it's also an exercise in competence. When you see Alvin Bragg and the case he brought, when you see Fannie Willis and the poor decision she's made, and the decision of that woman to decide, I'm going to do a RICO case, which some of our elite lawyers say is so tough to prosecute. We are not looking at some elite attorneys and great legal work.
Well, and the thing is, if you're going to try a former president, you have to have your ducks in a row. And you're right. We have heard from people across the political and legal spectrum who do think these cases are weak and they were not well constructed. I do think the federal criminal cases, the Mar-a-Lago documents case, that's probably the toughest one for the president and his defense team. But you have, you know, when you have Democrats out there saying this Alvin Bragg thing is a mess, the Fannie Willis thing is a mess, I mean, that's not just coming from right-wing pundits or from the Trump legal team. I mean, that's from people who are saying, you know, the scrutiny this is going to be under if you drag Donald Trump into court. And some of it's just not standing up under that scrutiny.
Shannon, who do you have on this weekend, or who are you working on?
We have got Chairman Mike McCaul with us. He was with the Israeli ambassador when Chuck Schumer went to the floor and made his remarks about Israel. So we'll talk about that in Ukraine, Haiti, Iran, all the foreign policy stuff. John Kirby is going to join us on that as well. And we're hoping to talk to Mitch Albom, which I know you guys have talked to him too, to see the update on all the people left behind in Haiti, as the U.S. government doesn't sound like it's in a position or, you know, interested in helping get them out.
How unbelievable is it when asked about what's going on in Haiti and what are we doing to get Americans out? They go, nothing. We're not looking to get.
Leave. We told you not to be there.
Yeah, here it is. Cut 28.
We are not actively planning for any evacuation. For 4 years, we have been telling Americans, do not go to Haiti. Do not travel there. It's not safe to do so. And for those who are there, leave as soon as you can feasibly do so without putting yourself at risk.
It's a little callous, don't you think?
Well,
by the way, no one goes to Haiti for a vacation.
Right, right. No one's going there on vacation. It's not like, oh, let's go to the fantastic beaches of Haiti and sit around having pictures of sangria. Most of the people who are there, the ones I've talked to and you guys have talked to, they're missionaries. These are charity workers. They're people desperately trying to help this country that is a disaster. And, you know, there's one family we're talking to where they're an American family, felt called to be over there, have a number of kids under their care, do not want to leave them there. Even if they could get to the U.S., they're like, no, this country's got to be fixed. We cannot leave these helpless children here, but we need some assistance to make sure that we're safe. And right. It doesn't seem like any's coming.
Yeah, Mitch Albom's doing exactly that. He's got about 40 kids, 60 kids, and he's got to get back. And right now they're guarded by 24 people, but these are vicious gangs. These are vicious gangs running the country, and the prime minister is not allowed back in the country. So what are our Marines going to do? They've waited for it to get this bad. Once again, we're evacuating embassies. Once again, we're looking at total chaos. And once again, it's up to the private sector to save Americans, led by Corey Mills. Shannon, I look forward to seeing your show this weekend. But Saturday night, are you
where I start.
Like, do you every Saturday, do you just tell Sheldon, sorry, not as long as Brian's got a show at 9 o'clock, I can't go anywhere?
Yeah, and like he wants to watch, you know, wrestling and golf and NASCAR and basketball and baseball and whatever. I'm like, I'm sorry. Brian Kilmeade takes precedence, and he recognizes that.
And that's One Nation at 9 o'clock.
Right now.
Quiet
He's
down.
He's listening right now. So if you want to, you know, talk him off the ledge with the sports stuff, right, maybe offer him an apology. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to tell him this. Sheldon, I have news for you. When you go to the wrestling, it's fixed. We already know the ending. So I hate to ruin it for you, but now I don't feel as bad. Watch One Nation. The ending is not fixed. We have no idea how it's going to end.
You're going to stick the landing, and I'm going to watch it Saturday night.
Shannon Bream, we're going to watch you Sunday. Thank you.
Bye.
When we come back, I'll open up the phones and also welcome in next half hour, Arthur Lee, one of America's most successful entrepreneurs, the founder of LifeVax, got a brand new book out, his story, Sorry, Can't is a Lie. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When you look at Joe Biden's approval ratings, he's getting his kicked everywhere. It's not just black
people. It's fair.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, in order to really get that campaign on the right track, they got to start looking at the totality of what's happening with that campaign and how different groups of people feel about him.
And nobody likes him. I'm telling you. I don't even think his family likes him. And you watched him yesterday go into Michigan. That was Charlemagne the Guard. Charlemagne the Guard, the God, we hope to have him on. But if you look him go into Michigan yesterday, he goes into a home. I guess he wanted some local coverage. And he was wanted to go and take a step and answer a couple of questions. He goes, let me take a couple of questions. And the staff turned around and just started pushing back the media. So picture this. I know the White House correspondents might be used to this, but think about it. You get up in the morning, you get on a plane, you go out to Michigan, you go to a small house in the middle of nowhere, probably freezing, and then you can't even ask a question. You don't barely get any B-roll. They take them off the porch and bring them inside. No meetings. No, well, people in Michigan need X, Y, and Z. I recognize over 100,000 uncommitted votes were in Michigan when I did the primary. I am here to let people know that I have not abandoned the Muslim Arab community. I am just supporting Israel. Whatever your message is, whatever you're saying inside, you could get more traction if you said it outside. But his mental state is so bad, they don't let him. One thing for the Trump team to keep in mind, it is going to be him going around apologizing. And it's going to be the vice president pro-abortion. She's not even pro-choice. She's not pro, reproductive rights. She's actually going to abortion clinics talking about the joy of it. It is absolutely insane. But that's how desperate they are. They need to make abortion front and center in this campaign. And for Donald Trump, they wanted to keep him locked up in court. Not working out so well. I don't think he's out of the woods yet. It's costing him millions of dollars. It's already cost him. He's got to put $400 million up next week for the civil trial. But in the 2024 race, your attempt to trump up charges in New York, to have state charges in Georgia, need I say the document case is on delay because of the motions that come with it? These are the cases that have your best chance of keeping Donald Trump out of the White House. And it actually might end up putting him in the White House. The other big issue that I thought yesterday that we'll talk about next with Arthur, there's two things. The TikTok situation, the CEO scurrying all around to try to save the app that's Chinese-owned with the back doors of the Chinese government should not even be considered, but it should be brought up for a vote because the president said if it gets to his desk, giving them 6 months to sell it or it's just going to be banned, he'll sign it. So let's take his word on that. But the other big story yesterday was Bernie Sanders, big hearing about a 32-hour work week. If you work longer, you could get jailed. Crazy.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Finishing out a wild week. As we mentioned before, just to remind you that Fannie Willis, which should be Fannie Willis, obviously, reminds me of young Frankenstein when Gene Wilder decided to call himself Frankenstein. But it's Fannie. But it's Fannie Willis gets to stay on the case if Nathan Wade is out. After all, Nathan Wade's so experienced. He did car accidents and wills before he started dating her. So I'm sure he earned it. But why she's able to stay on the case, if you read the 23 pages, essentially saying, we know they lied. But we don't think it affected the case. What about an ethics violation? And does it matter that she also lied when asked, why did you make that speech in Martin Luther King Church and talk about bringing race into this case? Oh, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking generically. Again, another lie. With me in studio is Arthur Lee. If you're smart enough to be watching on Fox Nation or on the Fox app, you could actually see him, the founder of LifeHack, author of Sorry, Can't is a Lie. The founder of LifeHack is in studio. Welcome back, Arthur.
Hey, Brian. Thank you so much, man. Yeah, you're always a supporter.
Absolutely. So first off, why did you decide this was a good time to write your story?
Well, I was trying to make a decision, as I do every day, and I started plucking from my Rolodex of experience. Mm-hmm. And I was flying down to see my daughter. I was in the plane, and I just started jotting them down. Half the time I was laughing because a lot of my foundational values come from very odd stories. And I also had a tragedy in my life, and I thought I could help other people by writing a simple book.
Tragedy was a car accident.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, suicide is so prevalent now. And I dealt with it over 20 years, 10 years. I really wanted to leave. My empathy for my mom, because I saw the devastation from the accident, is what saved me. And I don't think you could tell someone, you know, persevere, hang in there, life will get better. I think the first step is a solid reason not to take your life.
So describe what happened. I think
the accident?
Yeah.
Well, basically, we was going to, me and my buddies were going to go into Niagara Falls, and I fell asleep at the wheel. A car went off the road. My two best friends died, and I was in intense care for 2 weeks. I was 20 years old.
And what, you were all banged up too, right?
Oh, yeah. I almost died. I had punctured lung, broken ribs, broken scapula, a lot of blood loss.
Where'd you go from there? Devastated, right?
Yeah, I think, and it comes out in the book. I was devastated. But what's wild is the empathy from my mom saved my life then, and my understanding of the pain of others is why we have LifeVac. Because when I made it for my daughter, I remember, how could I let someone else lose their child in their arms? And I know that pain.
So you're projecting the pain your mom would be in.
Yeah.
Stopped you from committing suicide.
Yeah. Because when you know, I saw my two best friends' parents and siblings and friends crushed. And then, you know, much as I wanted to leave, I knew I could not do it. I felt other people could take it, my dad, my sister, my friends, but I knew my mom couldn't. And it's not about suicide can't as a lie. It's about building solid foundations in a simple method and the odd ways that you can get your foundation. But that was the reason for me, that I could not purposely do that to her.
So one day you hear about a kid choking. You project, hey, you know, that could have been my daughter. And you just got, you have an engineering background. Your dad was an engineer, correct? And you just started working on this.
Yeah.
And you come up, how long did it take you from concept to completion?
Oof. Well, completion's an odd word. It probably was like a year to have a really good prototype, 4 years to really get it where it was at a point where we were testing it on mannequins and force tests, and 6 years to market.
And you're just talking about a way. People think, oh, someone's joking, Heimlich maneuver. You're like, that's not effective all the time. How do I stop that? How do I increase those odds? You come up with LifeVac. And that was how many years ago?
That was 11 years ago.
How many units have you sold so far?
Probably 4 million, 3.5 million.
How many lives have been saved?
Just coming up on 2,000, over 1,100 kids.
And these are just people that wrote back to you and said, and you know about. Who knows how many others?
Yeah.
But between the Ring doorbell and surveillance cameras, this has helped tell your story.
Well, I mean, the leap of faith happened when I had it all together and you can't prove it works. I can't test it on a person. I was going to fly to Mexico myself and I'm testing on me just to get around the regulation. But we have 9 peer-reviewed medical journals. No one knows that. But if you watch a police officer save a child on YouTube,
right,
then you see it work. And it is that simple. And once again, it was my empathy because I did it because I knew I would not survive holding my daughter and having her die in my arms. Right. I'm done. That day, 10 minutes later. So I wanted to save her. But then I realized from the accident, how do I let your kid die and read about it and know that I was too scared or I was too worried about my getting sued or my finances? It was a non-negotiable. I'm going in on everything I got.
It's almost, and then you have the concept. It's almost like a plunger.
Yeah,
right?
It's basically a sink plunger from Home Depot that I re-engineered to suck out instead of push in.
And what has been – so I know, so I was doing something with the Nassau County Police, and he opened up his trunk, and there's the LifeVac.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Right, but I see it everywhere, but I don't see it everywhere it could be. It's in how many countries now, 23?
We've saved lives in 27 countries.
27
where we
countries.
Actually saved a life.
What stops every school from having this?
Stupidity, fear. Our society has become very fear-based. When I started...
We're about being sued, too.
Well, that's what it is. It's fear in general. So the first fear is, and they all said it to me, don't do it, you're going to get sued. You're going to get sued. It's too dangerous. You got a good life. Don't do it, don't do it. Luckily, I said, yeah, too bad. I'm going to do it because then I am a coward and I'm a ridiculous moron that I'm willing to let a child die that could be saved. So they're afraid, oh, we can't have it, we get sued. And then there's these myths. I'll just do the Heimlich. Well, it doesn't always work. I studied that. It's not in protocol with AHA or, oh, yeah. That's not how it works. Read the American Heart Protocol. It says the protocol's up to you. You got to do anything reasonable. So we have a combination of fear and, you know, lack of actual knowledge.
So the thing is, this plays into two stories. Number two, the 32-hour work week. If you only work 32 hours, how many life hacks would you invent? Zero. Yeah. Number two.
That's a day.
Yeah. Number two is TikTok. Yeah. So you get this invention. It goes out. You're saving lives. And all of a sudden, you realize you're being knocked off.
Yeah.
What happened and what role did TikTok
play? Well, this get rid of TikTok is the right thing to do. The problem, we went viral and we had one, I had one on my site that 9 million, then we had one as a company.
And by the way, listen to us right now. What site can we go on as people can see some of these saves?
Lifehack.net is best, and I appreciate that. So we went viral. About now, it was probably less than a month later, we had 7,000 Chinese knockoffs. What they do is they mine TikTok for what's successful. Now, the problem is they don't obey any rules or laws. They steal, they avoid the FDA, they avoid any form of compliance or quality control, and they steal all the marketing. This is their culture is business. It's just business stealing all this stuff. But
their culture is stealing.
It is. But here's the weird thing, though. They don't ethically think it's wrong. It's business. We just take everything, we'll just steal it. But it is it's corrupting our company, our country. They avoid the FDA. They avoid all laws. They are on Amazon, which is illegal, and Amazon's against rules. On Facebook, which is illegal and it's against Facebook rules. And they sell you crap. And they use TikTok to mine the public. You know, we're worried that they're influencing our brains, which the whole thing does. But what we don't understand is that's what its major business function is. What is good? They only steal what's good, and that's where they get the data.
And they don't have any government coming after you. So if I tried to knock off Arthur Lee's LifeVac, you can sue me. You're going to find out exactly where I am. You sue me. Absolutely.
If you're in the U.S.
But if you're in Singapore, if you're in Beijing, and then you're and I think I'm ordering a LifeVac. Oh, that LifeVac, that's a guy I saw on TV. That's a guy I listened to on the radio. So I order it. All of a sudden, wait a second, it's not LifeVac. I got some Chinese knockoff. May or may not work. Yeah. It's a knockoff. I'm not giving the inventor the money. So then how did you solve that real quick?
Commerce Department? We play whack-a-mole. Ideally, the FDA would do it because it's an illegal medical product, right? So they should shut them down. The MHRA does that. We're working with the FDA. We've been investigated by the FDA numerous times, and that's fine. And they're very scrutinized, and that's great. Make sure I make them out of product. We had last exposure we had, no problems. We were perfect. The problem is they don't go after them. Same whack-a-mole reason. They're Chinese. You go after them, they just change.
His book is now out. It is called Sorry, Can't is a Lie. It's an inspirational story about how Arthur Lee founded the LifeVac and what he went through to get there, saving lives every minute that he does it. The more he gets the word out, the more people use it, and the more people save it. This is the best example. Let's say you go into a baby shower today, and everyone's like, oh, what do I get? You know, where are they registered? But can you imagine if you're the one that bought the LifeVac and you get a call saying, I used the LifeVac you gave me.
It's the best.
And my kid's alive. My senior citizen in my house, my dad, who's having trouble at this point in his life, you saved his life to stop him from choking. George Bush, 41. He almost choked a bunch of times because he had Parkinson's. Yeah. And this would have been a lifesaver for him. So can you imagine you could have that feeling? I can't imagine you might not want that. Arthur is the founder of LifeVac. A few more minutes with him when we come back. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm going to pose this question to him. What if Bernie Sanders says it's illegal to work more than 32 hours? If he got his way, that would be the new American way. I think it would destroy the country. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Now, if a business wants to voluntarily try a 32-hour work week for themselves, federal law allows it. We don't have to mandate. And we will hear from a business today that does that. So if an employer thinks it's good for their business, makes it more competitive, go for it. We think that's a good thing. Government should not be in the business of undermining an employer's ability to keep their doors open with unreasonable and perhaps unconstitutional mandates.
So Senator Bill Cassidy, who made his money as a doctor, I'm sure that took a lot where you had to work a little bit more than 32 hours, maybe 32 hours a day, and then went into the Senate, is a little bit outraged that Bernie Sanders would be looking to mandate 32 hours or else I guess your business gets fined or additionally taxed and make it part of the work week. I just could not believe Arthur Lee, founder of LifeVac, who's here now, his book, Sorry, Can't is a Lie. I can't believe that they would look to put this into American society. Does it worry you?
Yeah, it worries me a great deal. The American work ethic is already in danger of you know, destruction.
Did you find that when you hired people, or did you have trouble getting people to understand the job?
I've resourced from my past, and all the people with me are people I've known, and we all work about 80 hours a week. But the problem is just the destruction of the pride of work. And you knock that down, owners like me, we're dead.
So you and Michael Rowe become friends now, and yeah. You guys talk about this.
Well, I can't help it. The guy has a good wisdom. He gets it, you know?
Right.
And I appreciate him, and he's right.
So this is some of the answers, Arthur. These are some, what some of the witnesses said yesterday. We'll play all of it. We'll play most of it. Cut 27.
We're here today because for 84 years, there's been no reduction in the standard work week.
People are tired. Workers are already finding ways to rest at work. They are surfing the internet. They are just slowing down. They are stepping away just to get the energy to get through the workday. I'd rather just give people back their time so they can properly rest.
There is no statistical evidence to merit a nationwide mandate of a 32-hour work week. And in fact, there's clear evidence against it.
I think COVID made people wake up and realize what's important in life. I believe it's a fact that people have woke up and they've decided, I'm not going to leave my home for $12 an hour when I can't even afford to pay the bills.
So you have somebody say they need to rest. They're working so hard, they got to rest at work,
yeah.
And they'd rather rest at home.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
We never learned that.
No.
You get jobs when you're 16, work as hard as possible,
yeah.
And there should be, I mean, your goal is to do something for a living that you feel fulfilled.
Well, if you don't want to work, you don't have to. So why are we restricting the amount you want to work? You want to be successful, you work.
Right.
And you should be proud to work. And I don't think we need regulations that say you can't work. We got enough people that don't want to work.
Right. And the idea that people don't understand that and politicians don't want to say that. And I brought this up with David Bonson, who's a very successful businessman. I said, do you think a politician can get elected if he says, I need everybody to work harder,
yeah.
Put more into it? Can you do that?
Well, the problem is you should want to. I mean, you and I work our butts off, and there's pride in that. I mean,
right.
I'm going back to as a kid, and I was breaking cement for my dad. And, you know, at the end of the day, I went over to him, and he said, good job, son. Well, we don't need to restrict the amount of work you do. If you want to work, work. Work hard. It's good for you. It's healthy. Gives you pride. This is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you talk about certain things. You were successful even before you invented the LifeVac, right?
Yeah, and the book is a lot about that. You know, there are stories of growing up that were like my uncle with FU money, my dad working on the treehouse together, and all these little incidents. You're in the book. The games do count from playing ball and learning what teamwork is and sacrifice and effort. But it's all a collection of those moments that affect my foundational ideas, my foundational non-negotiables.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are funny, throwing a rock, throwing a marshmallow, all goofy stuff. But I learned lessons. And I think with the isolation of our new technology, it's important to look back and say, what makes me who I am?
True. Just we'll out life back with a few minutes we have remaining. You'll be on One Nation this weekend, Saturday, 9 o'clock. You have some of these personal stories, and then this week I was saying, guys, make sure we get the best video for Arthur Lee's segment, and they said, you see what went viral. Tell us about this police officer, what happened, and how we got the dash cam video that we're going to show.
I just got a chill, man. Yeah, he shows up, the child, they thought it was a food, it was like mucus and fluid, which is very difficult to clear. They'd hit him a back slowed and done policy, and the officer.
Where are we now, Ohio?
Yeah. He puts it together. You see him put it together. You see it. But you know what the beauty is?
So wait. What happened? Like, so a kid was choking. How old's a kid?
He was four.
4 years old.
Yeah.
They called 911?
Right.
The cop has in his car, has a life vac.
Right.
So then we pick up the video.
Pulls it out of the trunk, races over, hits kid, doesn't work. They backbone again, doesn't work. Lay him down. A few more pumps, saves the kid's life. The kid high-fives one officer, and then he hugs the other officer. He gives him a hug.
Wow.
And you couldn't put together more of what I'm trying to accomplish, right? The kid shows gratitude to the officer. The officer did the right thing, had a life hack, and the difference was a life hack, and that child's still here, so my soul's okay, and his parents are okay.
How much does it cost?
$69.
So what is it like when in the last minute I haven't read any, when you know, hear the video comes in or you see it on the computer or it comes immediately, what is that like?
I get a chill. And because of my accident, I know that I just saved not only that kid, but his family, his friends, his grandparents. There's no greater feeling of gratitude than I watched that child be saved.
You said something to me when the hole was saved. You invited everybody to your company. And you say, you see that kid? And you looked about eight. He goes, he gave his brother something that he was choking on.
Imagine.
Can you imagine if that kid?
Well, it was me. Yeah. I was driving.
Right. Same thing.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's all in your book, and you could pick it up now. Sorry, can't is a lie, and pick up the life back right now. But just make sure it's not the one from China.
Yes,
the real
stay
one.
With
LifeVac.net. Keep it here, everyone. See you Saturday night on One Nation, 9 p.m.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.